stuff you can stick in these.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great vibe.
Yeah, because you have less stuff and it stays small. And you have more stuff that gets really big.
That's great. Shopping, and then if you see something nice, you can take it off, make it
funny. Yeah. No, that's the nice thing about the Vedic thing. It has multiple usages.
Yeah.
Well, the Western, you only do one thing.
Yeah.
A pair of pants is a pair of pants. That's it. You can't do anything else. The kids used to do that when we used to go to the Gangnam Forest. They take their swim trunks and put it on the head like a hat when they go. And then for the sun, and when they come back, so that they would dry. Yeah, so they would find something. You know, it's only the kids that do that. Everybody else is like, weird. Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Interesting, in the morning, Harry, there's even a question of what's the importance of rasa. Some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just the problem when one doesn't deal with these things. You know, it's not there inherent in the culture. One even doesn't see what's the importance of it. So you don't know what you're missing. You know, let's say someone grows up without any salt. So they don't know what they're missing, you know. You say by adding this you get more flavor. They don't even know what flavor is. You know, so what do you mean more flavor?
There is a need of education.
Hmm?
There is need of education.
Yeah, yeah, no. Probably wanted. Just devotees don't read into these things, so they don't look, or, you know, there's always the worry that, oh, if you read these things, that'll be sahajya or something like that. No, this is just science. You know, it's just natural. This is the natural human science. That's the difficulty. Okay. Four, Madhva. Therefore believes, okay, what are we doing here? This is the qualitative monism and qualitative pluralism. Okay, believing it as he does, all souls are essentially alike, but Madhva advocates both quantitative and qualitative pluralism of the souls. Right, so now he's also saying quantitative, that there's different levels. But as we understand, is that Ramanuja is looking at just the platform of the soul, not considering the conditioning, while Madhva is pointing out the conditioning element. Right? And so therefore, when you're preaching, you have to be able to distinguish there. It means, doesn't mean Ramanuja doesn't. It's just a side point. It's not a major point. But he will take out this qualitative difference. Right? So therefore, the conditioned souls, within that, those in ignorance aren't going to be very interested. Those in passion, be, you know, kind of, but not so much. And those in goodness, they'll be naturally interested. Right, so you make that distinction. But that's then made. We see both that oneness of all the souls, at the same time the difference when we come to apply it for preaching. Right? So it's not a problem that these two exist. Yeah, and also there, as he's pointing out, which we don't really worry about so much, is that in the spiritual world also on the platform of perfection, that there's different personalities have done different things. So therefore we're always in that position of servant. Right? But Ramanuja just brings that out by just everybody serving the Lord and you're following the parampara, so naturally who's above you, you're serving. You're not worried that he's there because he's done more. No, just he's there because he's the guru. You're gaining that knowledge, your connection to Krishna is through that person. Does that make sense? So both are there. It's not a... Does this make sense? In other words, the difference between the Vaishnav element of oneness and the Vaishnav element of difference, they're not a problem. They're not exclusive of each other that they can't function together. That's why there's a chinta beta beta tattva. Yes?
It seems that there is a problem a lot of times when we preach, then where we should see the difference, then we see the oneness.
Yes.
And then when we should see the oneness, then we see the difference.
Yes.
And then the people get really like bewildered.
Yeah. Well, that's just the lack of practice or lack of realization. You know, the tendency is because of the mode of ignorance, then we tend to see things backwards from what they should be. So even though we're functioning within the spiritual, we're still possibly using the opposite position than what we should be using. You know, so in other words, for the situation that is there, we should use the difference element. But because of the mode of ignorance, just by practice or by habit, then we use the oneness aspect. You know, because from the mode of ignorance, you think that's what's going to work. You know, so it's just a matter of time before one sees. So in other words, if it doesn't work, then one should analyze that and then see if that helps. In other words, that didn't help.
It just many people say that, you know, those guys are not sincere, you know, who cares, you know. But this is actually, it's a preacher's fault, actually. He can't distinguish.
So, but the point is because you're dealing with transcendence, that even if the person didn't understand at the time, they still get the benefit from that association. So because of that, now if someone goes who can make that distinguishing element, then they'll be able to catch their attention. But if not, then the other is left there. They may not, you know, be so inspired to hear from that same person again because, you know, it doesn't make any sense or, you know, for some reason they upset them. But it doesn't mean that they'll actually have a problem with hearing again if it's given in the appropriate. So that's the nice thing about it. It's not lost. And if you have good association, you're intelligent, then you can start to see what's the difference. This is just getting worse. His glasses.
Maybe hot and cold, that's
why. Yeah, probably something. He started this morning writing in the fog, and then, you know, you can't, you know, just people, you say you have to look over the top. Yeah, I think you'd want to mount them the other way. Okay, so now, so then Madhva therefore believes that even in liberation, the soul's different degrees regarding the possession of knowledge and enjoyment of bliss. Ananda Taratnya. Ramanuja rejects this because he's working on the platform. Because if you get into this, means it's a fine thing. Is that of course, Radharani, she is the Swarup Shakti. What she'll be experiencing is going to be much greater than us. But the point is it doesn't matter because we're experiencing to our full extent, so we're happy. You know, it's not like I'm unhappy because I can't eat 500 kilos like the elephant. You know, it's that, you know, he eats 500 kilos, he says, okay, that was a good meal, right? You know, but we eat, you know, half a kilo and we say, okay, that was good. You know, so the main point is 500, right? It's just whether it's 500 grams or 500 kilos, right? You know, yes.
Ramanuja couldn't reject
that. That element he doesn't reject, but see, is it just depends upon who's giving this. If you're talking about that there's gradation of souls themselves, then he's going to reject that aspect because it's not the soul that's gradated, it's the conditioning that's graded. And then in the spiritual world, the point is the servant enjoys like the master. So even though, let's say, the internal potency is enjoying more, if you interact with Krishna, what you will gain in happiness won't be as much as, means, let's say, Since our happiness is dependent upon Krishna's, right? So our directly interacting with Krishna, with no one in between, you know, it means as far as relationship, then us being so small, the amount of pleasure we can give him will also be small. But point is it's something, so Krishna is willing to interact. Does that make sense? Now, if Radharani interacts, she being the Sarup Shakti, that will completely satisfy Krishna. That's why the Nectar Devotion is saying she's the only one that can completely satisfy Krishna. So that means the happiness she must be gaining is so much unlimitedly more. Does that make sense? But Madhva's leaving it at that point, because then you're dealing with Vaikuntha, where there is a hierarchy, there is, you know, who's higher, who's lower. So that works nicely. It works in that function. But if you're looking at it that I am serving that person, so because I'm serving them, I'm adding that little bit to their pleasure. In other words, that complete pleasure is there, plus that mustard seed. You understand? And so that means the pleasure you'll get from it will be Mount Meru plus the mustard seed. But if you don't have that Meru as the medium, you'll only get a mustard seed. Does that make sense? So that aspect he's not bringing out, because he's just establishing the hierarchy. So Ramanuja is not even looking, and he's not even generally bringing out what we're bringing out. He's just bringing out that, no, everybody is enjoying their in full happiness and full bliss. So you don't have to get into that one gets more, one gets less. It's not important. Does that make sense? You know, everyone's at the party, everyone's happy. Someone's eating more, someone's eating less. You know, someone's dancing more, someone's dancing less, but everyone's happy. That's the point. Everyone, according to their nature and their capacity, is enjoying. So you don't have to bring out that difference. But if you're establishing hierarchy, you know, the parampara, then you bring it out. So for us, we only bring it out in the way of relationship. But at the same time, because of that relationship, then that enjoyment is the same also. In a sense. So that's why there's so many more advantages to a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. Otherwise, then you're bringing out one thing which is correct, but then if there's a problem, you don't have that balance. You know what I'm saying? It's not as strong. It means there'll be something there. Of course. Ramanuja will say, of course there's you know, hierarchy and gradation, but that's not important in the discussion. Because in reality, it's a oneness of quality. So it's because of the qualitative oneness, therefore the jiva and the living and the internal potency and Krishna can all interact. So the difference isn't important. The difference is important that you're an individual, they're an individual, therefore you can interact. That's as far as individuality is important, right? But for Madhva, because it's that dwait, he's bringing that out strong. So in every aspect of the philosophy, he's bringing out what's the dual aspect rather than the common. Does that make sense? You know, so it works as a complete, you know, that's the nice thing, is everything that comes from the Lord is complete. Right? But then there's more complete, most complete. Right? Because the material world's coming from the Lord is complete in itself. It runs nicely on its own. It doesn't need that they have to keep bringing ingredients from the spiritual world or something. You know, they've run out of some earth, so they have to bring some. Or, you know, the fire kind of has gone down, and that needs a boost, so, you know, like that. No, it's complete in itself. It's just the Lord is imminent, so he's pervading it. That's what actually makes it work. So it's complete in itself. The jivas can stay here, and then they don't need to go anywhere else. Right? As far as the bodily consciousness goes. Does that make sense? But the spiritual world is complete in itself, but it's more perfect than the material world. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that element of completeness is then would be brought out. Yes.
Maharaj, so then how jivas absorb the emotions or interaction with Krishna and with his energy? Does that depend on their level of advancement, or is it just, you know, like a stable figure?
It's a stable. It means one has a relationship, one's in that. So that's why the Stai Bhav is stable. But it's ever increasing, but everything's ever increasing together.
Oh, so it's increasing?
It's always increasing. See, the thing is here, let's say you do something. You had lunch, and it was really nice. You know, so there's some happiness from that. But so after a while, kind of the remembrance of that and the effect of that wear off. And then you eat again, and then it goes off again. But in the spiritual world, that happiness remains. The next time you eat, again, it's that much added again and again. So everything just hits eternal. The effect is eternal. So everything is ever increasing. Right? So that's why one has to have that kind of faith and commitment to be able to work with that. Because otherwise you think, wow, that'll be good. You know what I'm saying? Because we have this idea, no, the temporariness is important. But the point is, in other words, I'm trying to get something up to that neutral stage. Right? There's a problem. I'm trying to get rid of the problem. But there is that you can actually do something positive. Everybody's already happy, but you can make them more happy. Here it's because they're in distress, you try to make yourself happy. Is that what it is?
Both Ramaji and Madhva, they are Vaikuntha?
They're both Vaikuntha, yes, they're both Vaikuntha. Yeah.
They have different regions in Vaikuntha?
I would expect.
According to the moon?
There's unlimited place there, so like that.
And the two other Sikhidais as well?
They're not, they're Golok. Yeah, those two are Vaikuntha and the other two are Golok. We'll get into them soon. I don't think there's so much more. We've got another one. Four pages. And then we will get into Nimbarka. Okay.
Keep eating your grains, isn't it? Yeah.
Eating your grains.
It's like, for me, this philosophy is a little bit, you know, like fibrous material, you know, so I have to get on to the, you know, more.
Like when the book ends and we start something else?
No, it's just like you mentioned with Vaikuntha, you know, so it has a different...
A flavor, yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah, well, also, these are the two that are butting heads with the Maya bodies. Okay. Also, Madhva and Ramanuja. Because Nimbarka was before Buddhism. You know, so before the smartas and everything like that became so prominent that there was a need for the Buddhism. Right? Like that. And Vallabha will hear, then that will be after the time of, you know, after Lord Chaitanya. Though it's based on Vishnu Swami. So he also is way, way back. Okay. Madhva regards God only as the efficient cause of the world and not its material cause, which is Prakriti. God creates the world out of the stuff of Prakriti. Ramanuja regards God as both the efficient and the material cause of the world. Like, because he's looking at, you have the element of that, he's the efficient cause, but not its material cause, meaning that he's the one that makes it happen. It's by his energy it actually happens. So therefore it's the... okay.
Do you accept what Ramanuja says?
We'll take it that way.
And in our point of view.
But at the same time, he's different. Means, in other words, God's completely different from this. But it's through his energies that is happening. So the transformation of the energies, because the internal potency and the external potency are the same person. Two different manifestations. Right? So, therefore, that element of oneness, generally they're not dealing with. They don't come to those points. So both of them are right. So we see both of them. He's not the material cause, meaning the living entity is the material cause. But at the same time, is the material cause works based on the formal cause, which is the internal potency. And the efficient cause is reflected as the operational cause. Means Krishna is the original cause, right? So that means in the primary creation, then you have him, and it means him, all his potencies there, all his qualities, the superior qualities. Then the formal cause would be the internal potency. What are the forms and activities that manifest that? Right? That's reflected into the material world, where the jiva thinks he's the original cause, and the material energy is therefore what follows, is the reflection of the formal cause. So he thinks it's my work. I want something done, material energy transformed, so that therefore the result is mine. What he makes the mistake is that he's not actually the action like Krishna is. He's not the qualities. And he's not actually making the material energy transform. It's doing that on Krishna's potency. You know, like that. And the material energy is not his. The internal potency is Krishna's. Right? So what he desires, it carries out. So we're thinking, I'm God, so material energy is my potency. And so what I do, I get the result, and the result's mine. You understand? So Madhva is making the point of that he's not that. Right? So he's not doing all the different things there. He's separate. He's aloof. So through the energy, he gets it done. He's pointing out that aspect of it. But at the same time, as the energy is only manifesting the Krishna's potency. So we don't have any problem that both of them are there at once. He's not part of this at all. At the same time, it's all going on his potency. That's why our philosophy is a little more difficult to handle. Because here it's this or that, and they can't reconcile. But we can function. It's not like the next philosophy that it's this and that. This can be there. You can look at it this way, or you can look at it this way. So both are correct, but it's two completely separate ways of looking at it. We're saying is that the two separate ways that function simultaneously. But just depending on which aspect you're looking at, you'll use one or the other. Does that make sense?
Yes. Whereas the liberated souls, they see like that?
Yes, I mean that's how it's given. Lord Chaitanya has given that, so that's what's unique in the line. Because it's like there, so the gopis are complaining that Krishna is not behaving nicely. So then they'll throw it into that generic element of quality. He doesn't know how to deal with women. And then they'll give the example of how Ramachandra cut off Suparnika's nose. Right? So they're talking directly to Krishna that you don't know because you as Ramachandra cut off Suparnika's nose. That's you. You did that. You know, that's our evidence. So it's a simultaneously one and different. It means the rasa of Ramachandra is different, but the person is the same. You know? Well, we'll take it. No, it's two different people. Or it's all one rasa. But it's the other way around. It's the same person, two different rasas. So the difference is in rasa. And the oneness is the same person.
This is like God's way, he can have the most fun as the one person?
Yeah. I mean, it's only himself. It's just, in other words, you want to do something, you have to stop doing what you're doing and do the other thing.
Yeah.
God can do them both at one time. And to do the one thing, you know, it needs a certain environment, certain friends, certain activities, certain, you know, clothes or whatever else matches that situation. Right? So since God can do both of them at once, then also that whole manifestation of the situation, the associates, what they're doing, is two separate things. But it's simply just one person doing both of those. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. We don't see a difference. It's just the mood is the rasa's difference. So therefore it's Krishna who's doing all that, not Vishnu who's doing all that. Does that make sense? But when he's doing the activities of Vishnu, he takes on that mood. You know what I'm saying? Okay. While Ramanuja makes the liberated soul similar to God in all respects, except in some special respects like the possession of power of creation, preservation, and dissolution of this world, and the power of being the inner ruler of the universe. Madhva emphasizes the difference of the liberated soul and God. The soul becomes similar to God in some respects when it is liberated, yet even in these respects it is much inferior to God. Right, all that's correct, but it's just who emphasizes what. It means you can see one is emphasizing for rasa, the other is emphasizing for tattva. So that's all. If you're showing the rasa, then rasa means the interaction, the oneness of things. Right? And if you're showing tattva, then you're showing the difference. So because tattva, you're establishing who's who, right? In other words, God, we're not God. We're jivas. God's God. So even though there's some similar qualities, this and that, but he's got them in unlimited and we have them in minute, you know, like the ocean and a drop of... So we say both. Does that make sense? So when a person is too attached to the material rasa, we point out more to the difference. But as they're purified and able to appreciate, then we bring out more the element of the oneness. Because of rasa comes prasa. Does that make sense? Beginning of devotional service, rasa is not very prominent. Like, yes, we're going through it in Jiva Dharma, this rasa. But how many devotees have even heard this stuff? It's there. It's in the books. I mean, I can remember as, you know, new bhakta, they would, every Ekadasi would read Nectar Devotion. So we would have gone through this. Yes. Like that. I remember going through the second part, at least that much, you know, the Vibhava in, at that time, and I can remember later. But you don't catch that this is what it's talking about. That makes sense. You know, so that if you go through and study it specifically, then you catch it's there, because we're not used to discussion of rasa. Because for us, rasa means, what am I going to get out of it? Does that make sense? Like in the morning, the earlier questions were about what I'm going to get out of this. Or even if they thought they weren't asking, that they still were. Like, you know, the experience all get from the rasa. It's not about the experience you get. We were saying that it's aparoksha. So since you're not focusing on, you're not analyzing my experience of it, therefore you're able to experience it. When you analyze it, you can't experience and analyze at the same time. You can experience analyzation, but you can't experience the thing you're analyzing while you're analyzing it. Right. So that's why scientists can't experience their science. They experience being scientists, but they can't experience what they're analyzing, because there's no aparoksha. It's only pratyaksha. Right. It's only the senses. So they're not able to appreciate what is being gained just by being there. Right. While Ramanuja makes the liberated... Okay, let's see, we were doing that. The soul becomes similar... Okay. It does not enjoy the full bliss of God. Like that. The bliss enjoyed by the redeemed souls is fourfold. Shalokya, or residence in the same place with God. Samipya, or nearness to God. Sarupya, or having the eternal form like that of God. And Sayuja, entering into the body of God and partially sharing his bliss with him. So even here, the Sayuja is not even a full monistic Sayuja. I don't know that they had these things in the right order, because they take Sarupi as the highest. So I was a little surprised at this list. But Sayuja, he doesn't have Sharsti, being a close associate with the Lord. Like that. So it seems it's much more formal, his presentation in the Vaikuntha element that's there. The formality is much greater. Or at least it is to get there. But once you're there, whether it's something different or not, that's not clear from this. Okay. Thus, though according to Ramanuja, the liberated soul enjoys the full bliss of realization of Brahman, which is homogeneous, ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous,
being everywhere, and supreme. According to Madhu, even the most qualified soul, which is entitled to a Sayuja form of liberation, can share only partial bliss of Brahman, and cannot become similar to Brahman, Brahma Prakara, in the strict sense of the term. So in other words, you say even you're on the Brahman platform, you're only experiencing how much Brahman you can experience. You can't experience the Brahman experience that Bhagawan experiences, right? Now, if you're taking it from the element of Atmarama, that's true, because he's unlimited Brahman. He is Brahman. Well, we're a part of that Brahman. Does that make sense? So therefore, our position on the spiritual platform, what bliss we have, is going to be small compared to the bliss God has on being the totality of Brahman. Does that make sense? But when it comes to rasa, the interaction, then that's where the qualitative aspect is more important than the quantitative. Because in quality, it's the same. And it's just like, let's say you have now the position, let's say, of the child and what he gets in his house, right? You know, doing whatever he, doing his occupation in his house, you know, being in his room playing with his toys. He gets a certain level of happiness, right? Let's say his father is the prime minister of the country, right? So now the quantitative happiness is much different. Because the one, it's not only, you know, in other words, his toys are big and they're very expensive. And a lot of them talk and move around and, you know, do what you tell them to do. You know, we're not talking robots here, right? You know, you know, so the thing is, you know, yeah. And so from that it's very different, right? One can say, no, it's the same, that's in quantity, qualitative. Because for the child, it's his whole world. For the father, that's his whole world. So qualitatively, in their experience. But now if the father goes back, goes into the room, you know, is digging through the closet, finds some of his old toys, sits down, starts playing with them, it won't have quite the same meaning as running the country. Does that make sense? Right? So there's a difference. But at the same time, it's when that father interacts with the son, then it's on equal platform of what they experience. Does that make sense? So that's the aspect when you get into rasa, there's the same. When you're looking at it by position, then there's the difference. Right? So just the position of God, it's much, he's unlimited. We're limited. Right? Though we're connected, we can appreciate eternity when one is liberated because the soul is sat. That's eternity. But his experience of that eternity is small compared to God's. But when you add in the rasa between God and the jiva, then the experience is going to be the same.
Yes.
In fact, it means that will be the normal one that will be explained. We take it a step further because you're seeing God being pleased, your pleasure is actually greater than God's.
Yes.
Right? And then him seeing you being pleased, then that makes his pleasure greater. And then you seeing his increase in pleasure, you become more pleased. So in this way, it just unlimitedly grows. But generally, we only hear that the Gaudians only bring out these points. Because they're so intimate. So it becomes... Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yes.
In connection with this Sayujya, do Brahmavadis, they follow these sampradayas or they have their separate schools?
You can follow. They basically seem to have their own.
Different.
Yeah, but at the same time, you get the idea that they're in these sampradayas. The Sukadeva and the four Kumaras, they're in the Brahma Sampradaya. So they're getting their information in that, because you have to contact the chit focusing. So it appears that they're in the sampradayas, which is somehow or another they're not taking that element of instruction. So then from there it may branch off, but it still has its connection. But, you know, it doesn't really matter because, you know, we only know of two successful Brahmavadis. You know? Like that. You know. Does that make sense? So this means the element of duality there. That dual aspect, God is in one position, we're in another position. And if you're going to add to that, then the internal potency, that's another position in between. So he's pointing out by tattva, there is a difference. But when they interact as rasa, there's no difference. You know, you have the grandfather, you have the father, and you have the son. And they're all sitting there and interacting. But they're all enjoying the same happiness.
Prabhupada uses the example of the factory owner's pleasure versus what the workers they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
The factory owner, he doesn't take that same happiness or pleasure.
Yeah, he's not overly in bliss at the new water cooler or something. You know, he got a water cooler because, you know, it's required. But if the factory owner and the factory worker interact on a personal level, right, then they both are just as happy from that exchange. You know what I'm saying? In other words, one's pointing out the position of their happiness. The other is the actual experience of interaction. So they're discussing two different aspects. So it would appear to be contradictory, but they're not at all. Yes.
So if God is impersonal, then this interaction, you know, doesn't exist at all.
Yes, yes. So that's why Madhva was bringing out so much the thing of just the, that there's a difference. So he just, his point is to completely destroy the impersonal idea. Right? So if they're going to grasp from the Shastras talk about the oneness, he's just going to point out how, no, it's just different. He's not going to acknowledge any oneness at all, because he's just trying to the root destroy this exclusive monistic concept. What we can see here is that in the non-exclusive monistic, that it's there. You know, because he mentions the Sayuja, but it's not so much, but he's not alluding. So whether it comes out more in other aspects is another thing. But the point is he's just dealing on all levels that anything, because if you're conditioned, then you only have to worry about the difference. Right? Yeah. You know, in other words, if there is any element of oneness, you worry about that once you're liberated. But because we might say, okay, when you're liberated, then there's oneness, we'll apply that here. So therefore, no, there's gradation. So in other words, any ass way that the living entity could somehow or another bring out oneness and bring it into the mundane element, he's just destroying that. While Ramanuja's using that encouragement of, you know, going from, we have that need for that oneness, that community, that all those things together, is that's what you have in the spiritual world. So therefore that inspiring element of that. But here you don't have it. You know, so he'll break down the effect of attachment to the material world, but he'll use that attraction to the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So there is a lot more of the emotional element within them. Therefore, the big festivals, all the different things, the Vaishnav interaction, and all that. Well, amongst the Madhvas, that's not as prominent, because it's more of an intellectual. Yes, I don't belong here, belong in the spiritual world, this is who I am, this is my position, this is what I should be doing. Which is all correct, but it just takes a slightly different feeling, a slightly different approach.
Ramanujacharya, he used that example because there was all the sannyasis were sitting around, and the man was following this lady.
Yes, yes. Yeah, because they'll take it that, you know, this is nonsense, he's attached, he's this and that. But Ramanuja's point is, well, why is he attached? It's not the attachment that's bad, it's who you're attached to. It's a very good example. And so therefore he asked them, called them up, said, why are you following this girl around? He says, I worship beauty. I'm a worshiper of beauty. So he says, okay, so this girl is beautiful. I mean, it means you know, so not, nah, she's not this, that, or whatever. But the point is by standard beauty, she's very beautiful. So he says, okay, this girl's very beautiful. That's why you're worshiping her. Now, if I can show you someone more beautiful, you worship them? And he said, yes. So he took him into the temple, showed him Rangadeva. And so then, you know, and then he could appreciate, okay, you're someone more beautiful. So therefore he worshiped that person. I think I'm not sure if he was married at that time or he ended up marrying that girl. Whatever, he's with that girl through the whole rest of the Ramanuja pastime, so I'm not sure.
He married her after that, remember his pastime, like half-jewelry?
Yeah, but
that's the same person.
Yeah, it's the same person, and the same woman. Yeah. But I'm not sure if at the time of when they saw him in the festival, they were married or not. Yeah. That I don't know, yeah. But, I mean, it would be there, so I'm not sure what it was, but...
Boys, start the class, I'm coming.
Oh, that's something else. I was going to say martial arts already.
It's interesting. As the psychology of a Westerner comes, then, like,
he found something more beautiful, but still he remained with that lady.
Yeah.
Just kind of balanced person. But in our mind, like, okay, I gotta just
get rid of the lady. Who needs the lady, right?
Yeah, who needs the lady? This is total Maya. This is like, whoa,
yeah.
This is disgusting.
Yeah, so that's okay, is if you can maintain that the rest of your life. If you do, great. But if you don't, then you know, better you with that woman than another one. Because at least that one was the most beautiful, right? You know. So that's the concept. Yeah, that's the concept that yeah. Does that make sense? So the idea is how to engage that in the Lord's service. So Ramanuja was showing so many times this, the position. Because with Madhva, you don't hear so much about talk about the grihasthas and things like that. But Ramanuja, then he was showing it's the mood. Because otherwise you had the technically more attached sannyasis, of what they were attached to was less than the you know, the attachment of the grihasthas. You know, one could say, well, they have so much gold, they're attached. No, that's just what they do. He has money, he buys nice things for his wife. You know, that's just what you do, right? But that's just part of the duty. Well, the sannyasi has the cloth, but he's not supposed to become attached to it, even though it's only one piece of cloth. They can keep one piece of cloth. That's all. It's a gumsho. And so at night they rinse it out and hang it up, you know. Does that make sense? You know, and in the morning then you take your bath and then you put that on and then hari bol. So you only have one piece of cloth. So then, but they were, you know, attached to their one piece of cloth. Because when someone, you know, ripped off one kopan size of it, then, you know, they blamed that one of the other swamis, you know, ripped the kopan out of his cloth, you know. Well, yeah. Yeah, so he brings these things out, which are very nice, because it shows that the actual point is the mood, is the relationship, is the rasa. So they're able to accommodate that more. You know, so it's like, we will take it, you know, like the question this morning, the brahmachari, you know, like that kind of thing. But Bhaktivinoda Thakura says it doesn't matter if you're in the forest or in the house. It doesn't matter. As long as you connect everything to Krishna. That's all. But his point at Shastra points out, even if you connect everything to Krishna perfectly in the household life, there gets a time when you get tired of that mechanics. So that's why husband and wife take vanaprastha and reduce the household mechanics. Right? Unless she wants to stay in the house with the children and then he goes out. You know, that can also happen. But the point is that they both reduce it because they don't want to be so involved. You know, so then it's basically reduced down to just what maintains the relationship so you can function in direct devotional activities. Right? So it's a natural thing. So even they're all nicely connected, they still do get boring. Right? That's the thing. Well, so it's not that because we're thinking, oh, we'll go on forever because we think the thing itself is wonderful. So doing the grihastha life is wonderful, Krishna's wonderful, so hey, you know, win-win here. But the point is Krishna's wonderful and grihastha life is its wonderfulness is its ability to be connected to Krishna's service. But it on its own isn't that special. Right? Not at least here. In the spiritual world, they seem to be quite happy with grihastha life. You know, there's not really any complaints there. You know. Yeah, and it is eternal. Mother Yashoda is married to Nanda Baba eternally.
No, brahmachari. Except for
Narayana. Yeah, there's a few here and there.
Ascetics.
You know, not at least not in Vrindavan, that's not the point. But in Dwarka and that, you have brahmacharis. Because you have gurukuls. You have the acharyas there and all that. So the concept of brahmacharis isn't a problem. It's just they're vaishyas, so they don't worry about it so much. Because Krishna goes to Dwarka when he's 12. And so that's generally the last recommended age in a vaishya. Goes to the Gurukul and gets Upanayana. So, but as a Mahapurush, he's performing the activities of someone older. So actually it's 11 years, 8 months. That will put, you take half of that, that'll put exactly at 12 years. I mean 16 years. That's when he goes to Mathura. Right? So then, but he's taken Upanayana actually when he's 12, so he's within the limit. But he's performing the activities of someone who's 16. Does that make sense? So he's not, no rules are being broken. Right? If he had stayed, then there would be the question he'd need to get Upanayana. But it's not a feature in the pastimes. Durvasa Muni's there. So you see, they understand, they come, they respect, they do worship and all that. So it's not a problem. You know, and the boys before they're married, then they're not involved like that. But then because they're Vaishya community, they'll get married earlier. You know. So then all those cowherd boys basically got married during that when Brahma stole the cows. Right? They didn't actually know they got married. They were all asleep. But when they came back, they're already married. Okay, cool. A lot happened today. Okay. Yeah, it would be interesting, right? You know, go out, you know, come back home, find you're already married. And everybody's been talking about it for the last 1 year or something. Okay.
Not for the Western concept.
Huh?
Not for the Western mind.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't get into those things.
Worse is finding out that you're a father. You go out and then you
find out you're a father. Yeah, yeah. But no, they're married, but they won't be living together. They're too young. It's because, and being depending upon the nature of the person, in other words, if they're more intellectual like that, then they would get married later, boys and girls. And if they're more emotional than that, then they would get married younger. But you don't live with together as a couple until you come of age, right? So, I mean, I know one devotee from traditional family, Marwari family, and his parents were married. She was 5, he was 6. Right? But then they continue just living in their own house and going to school and doing everything they do. But they know, this is my husband and this is my wife. You know, so whenever there's family programs and get-togethers, and they all get together and all that. But, you know, it's just, to them it's like it's kind of like a game. Like that. So they don't mind, you know, like that. But then when they come of age, then they actually understand what it means. But then as soon as they understand it, it's already arranged. Yes. That's the idea. So you don't, there's no anxiety between them. Like that. Then they start living together. But before that, they don't. So then you would get that. So it can be much younger. So them getting married at whatever age that was, 5, 6 and that, is not strange for that community. Because what I mentioned, that was the Vaishya community. Mm-hmm. Marwaris or Vaishyas. So, you know, it's not a big deal. Like that. But that's generally the earliest age. Then there's the middle age, which is, I think, like 9, 10 or like that, like that, like that. Then there's later than that, than after. So in other words, there's really young, then just before puberty, and then there's after puberty. Those are generally the three ages. So only traditionally, like Brahmins would only get, you know, means the dwijas, the boys that get married just after that, but the Brahmins could go way beyond that, because Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas would generally get married when they're 16. Brahmins could get married then, or could get married when they're 24 when they finish Gurukul, or if they wanted to do 4 Vedas, then they would go to the 32, actually 3 Vedas, they go to 32 and get married then. Does that make sense?
Does it have any effect on progeny whenever the marriage takes place?
It means the first marriage? No. So it may have effect when they have children, but not then. Because the body matures at 25. Like that. So if the man's 25, then it just means the strength of the child will be better. Right. Okay, we did that. Okay. 7. Madhva believes that certain souls, like demons, ghosts, and some men, are eternally doomed and damned. They can never hope to get liberation. Ramanuja rejects this. The doctrine of eternal damnation is peculiar to Madhvacharya and Jainism in the whole field of Indian philosophy.
Are they Christian
people? No. Well, see now, Jainism is another thing. We can't vouch for them, what they're saying. But Madhva is going by the Gita Shloka, where Krishna says, then they go to hell basically eternally. But the point is it's eternal like anadi, is they'll be there for a long time. You can't say how long they'll be there. But the point is the world does end and it goes back into the Lord's body, so then they're not in hell anymore. You know? But at some point, even the person there, you can only be in hell for as long as the reactions to your sins are. Right? Does that make sense? Then you'll be out of hell. Does that make sense? You do something wrong, then there's a sentence for how long is the reaction to that in hell. So when that's over, then you're released from there. No, the point is what Mud was saying is that's so long that you're not worried about that. In other words, there's a class of persons who are always in the mode of ignorance, so therefore you don't worry about preaching to them. It's just a matter, don't worry about them. Right? So it's just a matter. Well, Ramanuja's working on this point that everybody's jiva, servant of God, so everybody can be engaged in the Lord's service. So as long as the person shows some favorableness, then great. And if they don't show favorableness, you just leave them. So Mud was pointing more on the thing is preach to those or talk to those who you'll get results. Right? Time's short. Be practical. Talk to those who you get results from. It's not that Ramanuja is not saying that. He's just emphasizing the element that therefore the preacher should try to help everybody. You know, and those who respond, then you focus on them. Does that make sense? So rather than avoid unqualified people, you are cultivating qualified people. But we talk about both, but we focus more on the qualification. Does that make sense? I don't.
And yeah. Then among devotees, the same principle applied, like we preach to those who are more like.
Yeah, yeah. Means in other words, you have a nature, right? And so those who their nature can relate to yours. So your how you explain your realizations, your examples, and all that, then they can appreciate. Then they come like that.
Let me take it a little further. The big preachers means their nature is more applicable to more people. They can, or their realizations.
Means I would say is, the realization is more, and so then they can apply that in a broader range. But you also see, you know, very advanced devotees that don't preach in a wide circle.
Yeah,
you know, you do see that. You know, like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj.
But that's easier to understand. Because they're so elevated.
But it's the same principle. It's just a matter of if their conditioning is such, it can work in a broad. But anything, once you purify it, then the basic elements are fine. So then as they become purified, they'll be able to find a broader base also. You know, does that make sense? But someone comes from a more eclectic background, then you'd find that they can deal with a particular wider range. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So then according to this description, it seems that Madhva and Ramanuja, they preach to a different audience.
Basically, because Madhva was preaching to the audience that Ramanuja didn't catch. So
those are more sponge, you know, Mayavadis.
Yes, yes. In other words, those who fell through, somehow they slipped out of Ramanuja's net. Then Madhva is targeting them. So that's why then the oneness thing didn't work. They slipped away. So now it's two. That's the way it is. So it just comes in to, you know, destroy whatever's left of that and everything. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's not a problem. So this whole thing that one is opposed to the other, they're preaching to different audiences. It's not a problem.
And that's obvious.
Yeah. But it's not obvious necessarily to the followers. You know. So that's why they use this. Why would they use? Why would you use the title of Dvaita versus Vishishta Dvaita? No, it's just comparison of, you know, this comparison of Vishishta Dvaita and Dvaita. So here's just comparison with Vishishta Dvaita and Advaita. But what's the subtitle is versus. It shouldn't be versus. It's just now we're comparing Dvaita with Vishishta Dvaita. Now Dvaita is opposed to Advaita. That you could put versus. Now within the Vaishnav, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, there's only one point of view in the spiritual world. right? That the, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, we're a servant and all. There's only one view. So to try to make it that amongst Vaishnavas there's different views, that's a material element. You know, so well, Jiva Goswami says this, but then this one says that, and it's all contradictory. He says that, that's not real. Manu already says that that's never to be done. You just don't do that. If you can't understand the difference, don't worry about it. You know, talk to somebody who does, or by the performance of your service, you'll get purified, then you'll be able to appreciate and understand. Like that. Because the point is everybody is a very unique individual living entity. So it means that there's going to be differences that we have to get used to. You know what I'm saying? Everybody should think the same and all that, but at the same time, I'm a unique individual, right? In other words, I'm the unique individual, and everybody else should think like me, right? Isn't that the basic material kind of perspective? So they have both the dwait and advait element, you know, like that. You know?
Unity and diversity.
Yeah, unity and diversity. The unity is with me, and the diversity is also I'm the unique one. Everybody else is just the same because they all just think what I think, right? You know? Yeah, so it's a little bit of a problem.
Mars, what did Prabhupada mean whenever he said one should never hope for utopia?
One should never hope for a utopia. Because you think everything's just perfect. What's the idea of utopia? Everything will be perfect, so then I will be so happy being in that perfection. Where's the relationship? Utopia means an ideal situation. Right? Because when they're talking about, when any philosopher is talking about utopia, what are they describing?
Sense gratification. Please.
The sense gratification, the situation. And, or they're saying relationships, but it's the situation of nice relationships. Everybody gets along, everybody's happy. Are they giving names? You know, is there examples of it? Is there a relation with God? Do they ever talk about that?
They give, for example, tiger and the deer, embracing. They embrace each other.
Okay, but what does the tiger eat?
That's the whole point.
Oh, he embraces them before he eats. Because if he embraces them, the neck is a little closer. Okay, yeah, that works so much easier. Huh?
Born again.
Jehovah.
But you also left out, but that's the tigers and the deer. But the lions, see the lions, now they're more furry, right? Tigers aren't so furry, but lions are nice and furry, right? So they're always in the boat with the little girl while they're going around with the family and looking at everything. And they talk. It's the same guys. It's the same the JWs. Now these talk, but then what? But they still, they aren't vegetarian. So they eat the animals that don't talk. So there's non-talking animals and there's talking animals. So the talking animals you're friends with, and they hang out with the family and do the whole thing, right? But notice it's always that. You never hear of, like, you know, the daughter's hanging out with an anaconda or something, a talking anaconda like that. It's always, you know, something furry. I'm sure that, you know, like, you know, maybe, you know, some big bear or something like that. So does that make sense? Yeah, so it doesn't make sense, but whatever. Yeah, it's selected. You know. So the point is that you have all these things, and then you talk about all that, and then when somebody asks a question, then you have to come up with some really hard line answer. You know, like we saw before, as they talk, like the materialist, where you're, like in the next class, they're talking all this nice stuff. Yeah, like Comte. Comte.
Comte.
Huh?
Comte.
Comte. Comte. Comte. Okay. So the M is all M's are in the nose? Yes. Comte. Okay.
Easy.
Huh?
It's easy.
It's easy, yeah. It's just the problem is I don't know how to read it from the one to the other. Because French it's consistent how it's read, no?
Yes.
It's just it's different from how English is read.
Yes.
Yeah. So. Okay. So Comte, right? Then that he's saying how this nice utopia and everyone's doing the good deed and it's just natural, all humans are there and there's the natural human, you know, being good, you know, like that, and you don't even really have to define it because it's everybody knows and everybody's doing. But then when you ask specifics, then he's really hard line about it. No, but you can't enjoy it, you can't be separate, there's no private life, there's no everything like that. So that's when it's like it starts looking like communism or socialism or all these other weird things. So that's the problem. It's just like you have Shangri-La. Okay, it's this nice place, and everybody's nice, and they all talk so sweetly. But what do they do? What do they do all day? What's the point? So it's just being in a nice place? You know, it's just like this. Let's say the guy's sitting there. He's sitting in the middle of, you know, his city, wherever it is. And it's busy, and it's traffic, and he's stuck there, and, you know, he's got 2 hours before he gets home. If we just pick him up from there and just stick him on an empty beach, you know, some tropical island somewhere, you know, the perfect, you know, how you say, turquoise, you know, water and the white sands and the coconut trees and that, and he's sitting there on the beach. Now, he'll for a moment, wow, this is great, nice, but then after 5 or 10 minutes, then... You know, where's everybody? You know, where's the party? What do we eat? You know, do I go swimming in my suit? So, all these different problems come up.
Yeah.
You know, so can he swim in his suit or not? So these are the hardline answers that these, you know, how you say, these dreamers up of utopia will then give. So that's the problem. It only defines a situation. It doesn't define the relationships. So that's why it's not. And so even if you're defining relationships, but the point is that they're not connected to God, then they don't actually give any satisfaction. Does that make sense? So that's
the problem. The point is that utopia doesn't exist.
It doesn't mean because that doesn't exist. This perfect place where nothing goes wrong, and that's the definition of it, that doesn't exist. Right? Even Vrindavan, there's demons there and stuff like that.
But that variety with Krishna, that's the fun.
Yes. The point is if God's there and the interaction with God, then that idea, then utopia has a meaning. But that's not what they mean by utopia. Yeah. Utopia just means that perfect place. But what are you going to do with that perfect place? It's only perfect because you're dealing on the platform of the soul and in relationship with God. You understand? It's all about the situation, the facilities. You know, oh, if we had lots of money and a big house and so many cars and, you know, a pool in our backyard and, you know, designer clothes and, you know, we had a good, you know, situation in society, then everything would be perfect. But what are they going to do as people in that situation? Right? Fight over who gets the, you know, who gets the Ferrari or who gets the Hummer or, you know, things like that. And you want to have a party in the pool like that, but your mom, you know, doesn't want it because she wants everyone to have the clothes on, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, dad wants his daughter in bed at this time and doesn't want her out in the backyard with that guy. And, you know, so where's the utopia? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point, is that utopia is thought of as that's that situation where everything's perfect. But perfect means you're in a relationship with God.
Their utopia is more like subterranean hellish planet.
It can be. But the point, yes, you could probably say that. But I wouldn't necessarily take it that far. It's based on the demoniac principle, is that I will be happy separate from God. Because the heavenly planets is also the same thing. The people here think, I'll go there, it'll be so nice. But when you get there, they're still jealous and envious. And remember, where did Arjuna get cursed to be a eunuch?
Yeah.
In the heavenly planets. And by who? You know, there's no more top apsara than Urvasi. Right? So here he is. How you say? Indra's kid. Right? Sits on Indra's throne with him. Right? Gets to watch Urvasi dancing. But at the end of the day, gets up cursed by Urvasi to be a eunuch. Now, is that your idea of what you thought of going to the heavenly planet should be like? So it's not exactly ideal. Right? It says that there's that big tree and there's mangoes with no skin and no seed. And when they get ripe and they fall, they hit the ground there and it creates a river. And the banks of that river are solid gold and the demigods come down there and take it and make all their ornaments and all that. So it sounds great. I mean, it means let's say, that much gold right there. That's a kilo of gold. You want to make a chariot. That's a lot of gold. Who's going to carry that? You ever think of that? You got to actually go down to the bank and get it and bring it.
Servants.
But the point is, the servants, but they're also there to enjoy. So there may be some kind of things, but you know, all those things, where are those details worked out? No. You know? It says that, you know, golden embroidered couches, you know, and I think they're up to 70 virgins now. I think it started off as 30, and now they're up to 70. I guess 30 is what, nobody was interested to blow themselves up with only 30, right? 70, all right, you know, yeah.
What did you say there about servants? That encapsulates that we think utopia means where is utopia. There's no such thing as utopia where everybody is enjoying it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Except for serving.
Yeah. Yeah, well, also you have Indra's there, his whole empire and all that. It's going great. And then Bali Maharaj walks in with his army and takes over and kicks you out. You know? And that, at least you can accommodate. Okay, there's this big guy and a big army, and he came and kicked me out. Okay, I can handle that. What about if a buffalo comes in and just knocks you off your asana and sits down on your seat? Moishasura. You know, when you see the pictures of Durga, and she's on the line, and she's got the spear or the trident, she's killing that guy? Yeah. That's Moishasura. Yeah, Moish means buffalo. The buffalo demon.
Sounds gross.
Moish. Hey, Moish. Hey, got some place for us, Moish. Yeah, you go talk to Moish. He's one of us, you know. But not today. Today's the Sabbath.
No, he was killed, huh?
Huh?
He was killed.
Yes, he was killed.
So something to, you know, to mourn about.
Yes, yes. Remember. Yes. Does this make some sense, you know? Yeah. Then you have Gajendra. He's an elephant on one of those planets, right? So he's a big elephant. He's walking. He's knocking down trees and everything, going to the river. He's enjoying himself. Then
he's drunk his own.
Yes. Well, that's because of the mask. They have these little, it means the male elephants have these little holes in the side of their head. And in a certain season, this liquid comes out. And if it goes into their mouth, they go crazy. Yeah. Like that. So, I mean, they're actually crazy. So, like in temples, like in Guruvayur, because they have so many elephants, I don't know, 50, 60 elephants. So they do their elephant procession. When one of them goes into that mass, then they just, with chains, tie him to a tree or something like that and just leave him there. You know, they take the food and throw it to him. Nobody goes near. No one even tries. And then when that's over, then, you know, he goes back to his normal duties. Right? So the point is that on the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Kshatriyas were riding elephants in mast on the battle. So that means, one, what's the nature of that Kshatriya to be able to control such an elephant? And two, how crazy is that elephant when he fights? Right? Because normally he's a war elephant, so he knows how to fight. But now he's crazy.
They're all crazy together.
Huh? Yeah, well, that's another thing. That's just, you know, you're on a battle. Why he's not home? Dinner's ready, and he's out fighting. He says, "That's crazy." You know, what is this? The falafels are getting cold. Is he nuts or what? So, does that make sense? So the things that go on in the culture, the intensity So that's what's meant. Now that's Kshatriya. That's the full mode of passion out there, that taste.
On a mad elephant.
Yeah, the mad elephant. Yeah. You know, so we're talking serious wildness here, you know. Yeah. So how did we get? We started somewhere a little back. Oh, utopia. So the point is we're pointing out is how all these talks of utopia, these things nobody connects. So Gajendra is that kind of an elephant enjoying themselves there. He goes down to the water, and then a heavenly crocodile bites him. Right? Now, if it was a human, you know, down here, you know, how long does he have to wait before the guy dies? You know, but, you know, it's 1,000 years because he's also from the heavenly planet. So they're both sitting there in the water for 1,000 years. You know, he's trying to get away. He's trying not to be dinner, and the crocodile's thinking, when's dinner going to happen? Can you imagine that for the crocodile? He's 1,000 years goes by, and he still is not getting anything to eat. Right? You know, dinner's not cooperating. You know, can you imagine? Like, you know, you come home, and your mom says, you know, oh, I got to go out here. You know, it says dinner's in the microwave, right? Like that. So you go, it's 1,000 years to be ready. Okay, yeah. Real slow. Yeah, that does better than I was going to say is then you open it, and then you go to reach for it, that jumps out and starts running away. You know. So. Yeah. You understand? So no utopia. Yeah. Okay. That's the bottom line. No utopia. Okay, so there's a eternal damnation, but he's even talking here the eternal damnation of meaning that it's just so long they're going to be there. So when he says he rejects it, it's not that the two of them are sitting there and fighting over the same thing. Ramanuja's point is that you preach to everyone. Everybody can be, you know, in some way or another be redeemed or at least get some Gyatha Sukriti or something. But you don't focus on the eternal damnation because if you do, then what is the neophyte devotee going to do? Oh, they're nonsense, rascal, demon, you know, like that. And so then they won't behave nicely. Well, if everyone can be saved, okay, if he's not favorable, you still deal nicely. So it's going to create better etiquette. Right? But then there's the problem of getting too close to them. Right? Well, Madhvas will keep you completely away from them, so you get no bad association. But then the neophyte mentality might come up of thinking one's superior. So each one has its strong point, each one has its weak point. So you need to understand both. Does that work? Yeah. Okay. Dvaita versus Advaita. Refutation of Dvaita's theory of Eka Jiva Vad from Vishnu Tattva Vinirnaya. So they're saying Eka Jiva Vad means there's only one Jiva. That's Brahman. It means there is no other. It's just a... You've just tapped into a concept, right? You know.
Who's
Advaita? This would mean Shankara. So this Advaita would be Shankara. So then
against Shankara.
Yes, like that. So then this one then this is what Advaita is made for, is for dealing with these things. The Ekajiva Vada, according to which this entire universe is a figment imagined by one embodied soul, is quite unreasonable. Right? Because if that's there, then which one is the one that is getting? So you'd have to be very careful about who becomes self-realized, because then everybody else disappears. Right? You know, but they're not worried because they think they're God, they're the center of the universe anyway, so they just naturally think that I'm dreaming all this up. But you're so good you can dream up all that, you know. It's like, how is it all these laws, everything's going on without you, right? For the enlightenment of that one embodied soul, it should be decided whether he is a preceptor or a pupil, and then establish the required pupil-preceptor relation. If X is that soul who is conscious of the fact that everything is his imaginary creation, then he, as a preceptor, will not engage himself in giving instructions to others treated as his pupils, because all others except himself are unreal and no purpose would be served by giving them any instructions. Right? In other words, I've dreamt this whole thing up, so what's the use of telling everybody in the dream that you're not real? Do you understand? So therefore, I would just go on with the thing because it's not real. Obviously, nobody worries about his duties towards persons seen in a dream. E.g., if one obtains a son in one's dream, one never tries for his upbringing and education. It just doesn't happen. So therefore, you know, why would they be preaching? Why would they be trying to tell you that, no, you have to wake up? Because the point is, there's only one soul dreaming it all up. Right? If that one soul is you, then everybody else is a dream anyway. So what's the meaning? You know, just tell yourself. Right?
How they choose this one soul?
Sorry?
How do they choose this one soul?
No, but they're basically working on is probably each individual thinks he's the one soul. Because if I say this to you, who are you going to think is the one soul?
You.
Yeah, of course. You're not going to think, I'm the dream here. Right? No, says, wow. I mean, so all this is a figment of my imagination. So it's not really my mother and father and you know, family and this and that. It's just, it's all an illusion. It's not actually here. That's how each person's going to go away. So each person thinks I'm the center. You know? Does that make sense? So, you know. Because how popular would it be? Yes, it's all an illusion. It's not actually here. You know, there's the ultimate Brahman, and we're all part of, you know, we are all that Brahman. And so therefore, you know, this is just a dream of one person. And I'm that one person. So all of you here, you're all illusion. You don't actually exist. You know, are you going to buy it? Or are you going to go, wow, I like this philosophy? No. So in other words, they don't preach this. If someone asks, they may bring it up. It's not something, a basis of preaching. But still, it's a fundamental point. It's because if it's all illusion, then whose illusion is it? Right? Yeah. So you can just, whose illusion is it? Is it yours or is it mine? Yeah. That's just, you know, whose illusion? Yeah, okay.
So this is just the fine print.
If you
actually take up the process, then you
read
the fine print.
Yeah. So, but he brings this out as a Mudd will bring this out as a major point, because otherwise, then one is your, so everybody else is a dream. But if you're taking it that, okay, even if you say, each person can say, I'm the one, and how I see the world is the illusion, right? Because there is only one Brahman, so actually there's only one person. So it's Brahman who's seeing in all these different ways, just like, you know, the air is caught in the various pots. So you think that there's so many, but there's only one, you know. But the problem it comes is that why would the one, if it's undifferentiated, is not conscious, why would it be thinking about I'm one, I'm an individual? You know what I'm saying? So all these different things that comes up. So it comes up as just some way to try to explain their philosophy. Moreover, suppose somehow that one soul is discovered. The difficulty does not then and there end. As pointed out above, he cannot function as a preceptor to establish the required pupil-preceptor relation, because you're only talking to your own dream. He cannot also function as a pupil, because that would make him receive instruction from a preceptor who is none but the product of his own imagination, and thus unfit to serve any useful purpose, like imparting true knowledge. Right? So you couldn't be the teacher, because you're just teaching persons who aren't there. And if you're the pupil, you can't hear from your guru, because he's also part of the dream and an illusion. So what knowledge is he going to give you? Right? So very clear. So this is how Madhva's stuff works. So when you apply it to the Mayavadis, it's like he takes it so far, it bends their head completely out of shape, right? You know, that's the whole point. Because the Ramanujas, it's one, so look at it in its proper Vaishnav oneness. But Madhva just goes in there, takes it, bends it, you know, head out of shape. And then when they can, then just points out, therefore, there's you and there's God. You know, and it's just, you know, like that. So it's just a different style of preaching. Fun, you know, but if you apply it on the Mayavadis. What is the purpose of learning? It should elevate the pupil on the path of liberation, right? Because the Upanishad says that, right? It means you have the teacher and the pupil, right? So the teacher is the upper principle, the pupil is the lower principle, and the combination where they connect is through knowledge. So if one is real and one's illusion, right? And the fun part is that being that one who is having the dream is also an illusion that you're that one. So then it's all a dream. So it gets even weirder. Okay. When we consider the pupil to be that one soul, what does happen when he gets learning? He becomes a preceptor. Is that an elevation or a fall? Right? Because now he's the pupil, but when he becomes the preceptor is an illusion. Right, he's a dream. So if I become the preceptor, have I become elevated? Because the position of preceptor is a dream, you know. But I'm real, you know. So you know, it starts to get weird. So he's taking all these things that are, you know, how weird you can make it, and Mud was taking it there. So that's the thing, is his logical arguments are so bold and direct. And get into such fine detail. That's why it's sometimes hard to understand. But you see, when it's applied directly to opposing the Vaishnavas, it makes very clear sense. But when it's opposed to the position within the Vaishnav tattva, then sometimes it's confusing because it's being presented as if it's this and nothing else, rather than I'm emphasizing this aspect. Because by doing that, then it's so effective in dealing with the Mayavadis. As it is believed that the preceptor is the illusory product imagined by the pupil, a learned pupil, when occupies the position of the preceptor, will himself become reduced from reality to unreality. Thus, the learning, instead of elevating him, will degrade him. None will dare to undertake such a downgrading learning, right? So neither you would teach your dream because it's unreality, and neither would you want to elevate yourself through learning because then you become part of the unreality. So therefore, ignorance is bliss. That's why Prabhupada gives the point, is that this Mayavad, the Buddhism, all these, they give rise to rampant sanskrit communication. Because nothing's real, doesn't matter what you do, anything like that. Even though they'll say there's so many rules in that, but ultimately it doesn't matter. What do you mean? It's all an illusion. It's just a flow of consciousness or just a dream. You know, like that. Okay, so stop that one. Yeah, see, now at this part, this is more fun.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandini. Okay, hopefully this will go a little quicker. Oh yeah. Yeah, the rest of it's just Shankara, so this will go quite quickly.
I suppose that Madhacharya, when he was meeting some Mayavadi, was converting them to Vaishnavism.
Yeah, of course. He's defeating them so that they take up Vaishnavism.
In a impersonalist... must be defeated by this happening.
No, I mean, he gets so technical. That's the thing, is he can get so technical. That's why you see one that's turned into the English, and he deals with the concept, sometimes it's so hard to understand because it's so technical. But when you see it's applied into its, you know, its point of why it's that technical, right? You know, it's just like, let's say you have some very intricate machine. You can't understand the machine, but if you apply it and it does what you say, then you can appreciate it. So that's what it says. Now we can appreciate Mother's philosophy. Now before, it's that because it's unique in his approach, therefore he's bringing out that uniqueness in a way that makes it so it doesn't even seem to fit into the Vaishnava. Yes. That's the problem with the previous research, is it didn't bring out how it's just taking that one party aspect so that it's so effective in dealing with the Mayavadis. Right? Because Ramanuja would say that dream, but then there's the original, and then there's the reflection of, you know, he would get into take it that way. But here he's just saying, is, you know, your platform is totally absurd, so you have no platform. Right? So then what's left? Ours. Right? Because we can explain it, what you can't. Well, the other one is pointing is that we can explain your platform, but how in a higher fashion. you know. Like that. So it's you know, but you know, both work. It's just in other words, if someone can deal with the pleasant, you do that. If they can't, then you use this more rigorous form. You know, twist their head up like a pretzel, and then. Well, that's the thing is it's so absurd, is that, but it works really good. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just like, let's say you're dealing with an adult, you talk nice, use nice examples. But like when you're talking with kids, nice examples don't work because it doesn't spark anything. You say the most absurd examples, and bang, it's just like, it's twist your head, and it's like, you must be saying something good, you know, it's like that, you know? And so it works. So it's in other words, who didn't surrender to Ramanuja, then they have more serious problems. So now you come in with the heavyweights, and you know, in other words, you had good cop, bad cop. Now the bad cop comes in, you know, so it's like, okay. You know. So like that.